Appreciate that reading, Gil. We're going to get to that in a little bit, but I wanted to, that's something that we'll get to in a few minutes, and I hope that you listen to those things, because that's where we're going with this morning. I don't know if you've looked at the title of the lesson this morning, but it's about Rahab. I don't know how many sermons you've ever heard. I know it's the first time that I've ever preached on Rahab, so it'll be a first for me. But Rahab, we've been talking about heroes of faith the last several weeks. And in Hebrews chapter 11, in that chapter of heroes of faith, Rahab is mentioned. And the Hebrew writer says, you know, even Rahab, the harlot, by faith, she did not perish like the rest of those with her who were disobedient. And so the Hebrew writer says Rahab was someone that we can look at and realize that her faith saved her, that it changed her life. James, in chapter 2 and verse 25, James will also allude to her and say that even the harlot Rahab was justified by works. He talked about her receiving the spies, the messengers, and sending them away. Now, that's Rahab. Now, I don't know what you think about when typically you don't really preach about a prostitute, but that's exactly who Rahab was. And I think that there's no one better to look at with the idea of what's behind her and what we're wanting to look at about her life. Second chances. Oftentimes in our life, we're afforded a second chance. And if it were not so, none of us would have hope in this life. And so what happens when we're afforded a second chance? Well, we're going to start in Joshua chapter 3, if you want... I'm sorry, Joshua chapter 2. If you want to flip back over there, there's where we're going to go this morning. Now, Joshua is the book where Rahab is introduced, where we meet her, where we find out about her. If it weren't for Joshua, we wouldn't know anything about her. But we know that Joshua, in chapter 2, beginning in verse 1, he says that he grabs a couple of men, and he sends them to spy out the land. He says, I especially want you to go to Jericho. We're about to go into the promised land. We're about to make that huge step of faith and go in where God has promised us. He's already given us this land. More than 400 years earlier, when God promised Abraham that they would own all of this land, it's coming to fruition. Joshua is about to lead them in. They're going to go across a river. They're going into the promised land. And the first place they're going to go to is start conquering cities, and God is leading them. Joshua says, go out and spy it out. Look it over. See what's there. Did they really need to do that? No. It really doesn't matter. But Joshua wants them to go and look at it and see what it looks like. So they send them in, and these men find Rahab. Now, we're going to get there in a second. But I want you to think about this. Before we get there, let's rewind just a little bit. And the thing about the Scripture, about Joshua or nowhere else, does it really tell us about Rahab's previous life other than she was a prostitute? Okay? Now, I want you to stop for just a minute before we get to her in here in this text. And I want you to think about a couple of things. Think about the poor choices that Rahab has made in her life. You go home, and you're introducing, or your sibling comes home, and can you imagine your little sister, your younger sisters, want to introduce their older sister to their friend? How do you introduce your sister? Hey, this is my sister Rahab. She's a prostitute. Not quite the same as, hey, this is my sister Rahab, the valedictorian. Doesn't ring quite the same, does it? Or a parent, when someone comes up to you, and how many times your children aren't with you, and someone asks you, where is your son? Where is your daughter? How are they doing? What are they doing with their life now that they've left home? What are they doing? Oh, I'm so happy to tell you about my daughter Rahab. Well, let me just share what she's doing with her life right now. How many parents, how many of you would enjoy that story? we don't look at and celebrate those things in this life, do we? That's not something that we would go, man, I am so proud of my daughter. I'm so proud of the things that she's done with her life. But you look at Rahab. Now think about her for a moment. Do you think that Rahab ever went in and looked in the mirror and said, man, I am so happy with all the choices I've made in this life. I look at where I am and I am so proud of myself. I've accomplished some amazing things. I am so just filled with joy about my life. You think she ever said those things? Do you think she ever sat there and went, man, I'm excited. I'm ready to go home and see mom and dad. I'm so happy to see them. I want to go and look them in the eye and let them tell me how proud they are of me and of all I've accomplished. Do you think she was really desirous of going home and facing her parents? Was excited about those conversations that they would get into about her life? Rahab made some really, really poor choices in her life. She knew where she was. She made those choices. She made those decisions. She was the person who she had become because of her own choices. She did this. This was her. And there you go. What a horrible story. If it ends right there, right? What a horrible story. You'd look at it and go, man, it's awful that this is where you ended. This is all that you've ever become. And I'm so sad for you that you had to go through this and that you made these choices, but you did it. So therefore, it's your own fault. And be warmed and filled. That would be a horrible ending to a story. But that's not the story we want to focus on this morning. Because as with all of us, and this is what I want us to do this morning, as we talk about her life and her choices, you know, we look at our own life. And how many times have we made poor choices in our life? How many times can you look back through the history of your life from the time you were little until you are where you are right now and haven't made the best choices in your life? All of us can look at and can really associate ourselves with Rahab, with all the poor choices. As a child, were you ever a little bit afraid to go and look at your mom or dad knowing that they knew the things that you had done and the problems that you had caused and you were in trouble at school or wherever it was and you had to go sit down and tell them what was going on in your life? Were you proud of those moments? No. So we can kind of connect, maybe not exactly, and maybe not the very same things, but the reality is this. We are no further removed from God than Rahab was. God was no further away from Rahab than He was from us and the choices that we made in this life. Now, a lot of people don't want to hear that. A lot of people want to look at someone else and go, well, your life was horrible. And that's the absolute worst thing that you could possibly ever choose to do. And my life isn't anything like that. And so we'll justify ourselves. But the reality is, when we make poor choices that divide us and move us away from God, we end up in the same place, far, far removed from Him. But then you look, and here we go, in Joshua chapter 3, the spies come in, and they go to Rahab's house, and they're going in to spy the land out. And I don't know exactly the conversation that they're having with her, but they're sitting down, and she realizes why they're there. She realizes what's going on. Now, I'm sure they chose her. They probably asked for, where is a prostitute in town? Because it wouldn't look strange for men to be going into her house. People have accepted that, so there's a place for them to go, quietly, hopefully unseen, unnoticed, and they can go in and do the things that they're wanting to do in this city and look at it, and what's here, what's for us, what are we going to be up against when we come in to take over this city? But it says in verse 3 that the king of Jericho sent word to Rahab saying, bring out the men who have come to you. You have entered your house, for they have come to search out all the land. Now she's hiding them. They're in her house, and she's hiding them now. Yes, they came, but just like all the men who come, they left. And maybe they went out the gate. Maybe if you chase them quickly, you can catch them before they get away. And so Rahab takes and hides them. She protects them. What would have happened if she had turned them over to the king? Maybe she would have gotten a big reward. Maybe she would have got a big enough reward that she wouldn't have had to worry about her future. You think any of that was going through her mind? Maybe I'm going to make this. I could make it big right here. I could get a big bag full of gold, and I wouldn't have to do all the things that I've chosen to do. And maybe I could get a better house on another part of town or somewhere else and start over. I don't know what's going through her mind. But the reality sinks in when she realizes who they are, why they're here, and she says, I'm going to hide them. But you skip down with me in verse 9. And it says, and she said to the men, and look at the first thing she says, I know. Now wait a minute. I know. So there's an exclamation point right here. There's no doubt in her mind. Whatever she's about to say, she goes, I understand. I know what's going on. I understand this. And something is going on. Something different is happening. I know that the Lord has given you the land and that the terror of you has fallen on us, and that all the inhabitants of the land have melted away before you. I know who you are. I know who you belong to. We've heard all of the stories about you. We know what's going on with you. Everybody in this city, their hearts have melted because we've heard of who you are. What she's really saying is, we know who your God is. Look, for we heard, verse 10, how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea before you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who are beyond the Jordan. Wait a minute. Do what? Now here she's talking to them, and she says, now I know what happened. We've heard the stories from everyone. We know who your God is. We know what He's done. We know that He has an ability to divide a sea and dry the land so that you can walk across in the middle of the water. No one has ever done that before. No one would even dream of telling a story like that. But she says, we know about it. We've already heard. We've already heard how you've destroyed kingdoms on your way here. No one is not shivering in fear of what you're going to do to us. I know these things. So Rahab is sitting there with knowledge, and now she has to make a decision. What do I do with this knowledge? Now that I understand some things, what am I going to do with the knowledge that I've gained, with the information that has been given to me? What am I going to do with that knowledge? What am I going to do? She says, in those verses we just read, I know that the Lord, what He's done. I know who He is. And I know, as she's saying, I know that He is the one who what? He's the one who gives victory. It's not in you. You couldn't have destroyed all those people. You couldn't have divided that sea. You couldn't have done those things because we couldn't do them either. I know that it is the Lord who gives victory. Look at verse 11. When we heard it, our hearts melted, and no courage remained in any man any longer because of you. For the Lord your God, He is God in heaven above and on earth below. This God is not relegated to some temple somewhere. The God, your Lord, your God, is God of heaven above and earth below. He is God everywhere. Everything is His. Everything that's come into existence came in that way because of Him. I know who He is. I know who your God is. Now then, opportunity knocks. Rahab is where she is. She's looking at her life. She knows all the things that she's done. She knows all the decisions that she's made in her life and how poor they were. She knows what kind of relationship I'm assuming that she has with her siblings and her mother and her father and all of her extended family. I know she understands all of those things. But now there's an opportunity lying at her feet. This city belongs to whom? Those who follow the Lord, the God of heaven above and earth below. This is His earth, this is His city, and whomever He gives it to, that is their city. And the only people that are safe there are those who belong to Him. Opportunity. What will I do with this? You, as we just read, you are God's servants. Now look at verse 12. Now therefore, please swear to me by the Lord, since I have dealt kindly with you, that you also deal kindly with my father's house, give me a pledge of truth or faithfulness. And what she says is, you're God's servants. You've been empowered by Him. I know you're here. I know you're spying out this land. And I know He's already given it to you. We understand that. We know that He's going to rule here. He owns this city already, and He's giving it to you. Now I'm asking you, because I dealt kindly with you, that you deal kindly or faithfully to me as well. Actually, what she says is that you will deal kindly with my father's household. Spare us. And who does she say start with? Herself? Spare me? Now she says, will you spare my father's house? My father and my mother, my brothers and my sisters, and all that belong to them. Will you be faithful to us? Will you save us? Will you not kill us? Will you let us be a part of this city? We want to belong also to you and to the Lord. Will you do that? Yes, we'll do that. That's what he says. But what the spies say is, all right, we'll do that because you've dealt kindly, we'll deal kindly with you. But here's what you have to do. I'm going to give you a scarlet thread you've got to tie on your window. You've got to do that. When we show up, it's got to be there. If that scarlet thread is not tied out there, then the agreement's off. And the second thing is, you've got to have everybody in your house. This is the only house that's going to be saved. Everything else is going to be destroyed. You better get them in here. If they're outside this door, they're going to die. And that's on you, not on us. Their blood will be on them, not on us. Look at verse 21. After they tell her what to do, she said, according to your words, so be it. So she sent them away, and they departed, and she tied the scarlet cord in the window. Did she wait? I love this. Because she didn't say, you know what, I got time. They've got to go back and rally their troops. They've got to get the army together. They've got to get all their supplies ready to go. It's going to be a while. So I'm not going to put this cord out, because people are going to start asking me, why is that cord hanging in your window? We've never seen that before. Is that some new sign that you're putting up? New advertisement for business? I don't know what that is. Why is it out there? Why are you doing that? No. She said, immediately, as soon as they departed, she immediately went and tied it in the window. She was ready for change in her life. She has been given an opportunity to go, to do away with her past and start anew. And she immediately goes to her family, and she talks to her family, and she tells her family what's going on, and they have got to be in her home or they're lost. Rahab had a second chance, and she focused on what was right, not on her past. Not whether she was worthy to be saved or not, but she said, I don't want to deal with all of that stuff. All I know is God can do anything, and they said they're going to save me, so I'm going to go here. I'm going to do what's right. I need to do what's right. I'm not going to worry about my past. And she also said, I'm going to worry about my family. I'm going to go to my family. I'm going to talk to my family. I'm going to do what's important for them, and I'm not going to focus on the things that have separated us in our life. I want to focus on we're family, those people that I love and that I care about.
So she immediately did what they required of her, what God required of her in order to be saved. Now, you think about her life and you fast forward to us today. And you start thinking about our life and who we are, and you look at the world, the modern day world, and you look out and you think, how many times do people have second chances and not take them? Nearly everyone that's in prison has been there before. Why is it that when someone gets out of prison that it's almost immediately that they go back in? Because they're not facing an opportunity that they understand fully. They're not willing to step out and say, okay, I'm through with my past and I'll have a future. And too many people have told them, you don't have a future. Because look at the horrible life you've lived. And just like Rahab was probably told over and over in her life, you'll never mean anything in this world. You'll never have a life because you've destroyed every hope and chance that you have at a normal life. But I tell you today, that is not true. God doesn't look at our past, but He looks at our future. Because He is the one who holds our future in His hand. You think about your family. How many family members do you have that do not know God? How many people do you know in your life around you? Maybe it's not even just your family. Maybe it's other people. Maybe it's your neighbors or your friends. And how many of those do not have a relationship with God? Do you think they have a second chance, an opportunity? What are we going to do with that opportunity? Are we going to allow them? Are we going to give that opportunity? Are we going to educate them about that opportunity? God loves you. It doesn't matter where you've been. It doesn't matter what you've done yesterday or the day before or the rest of your life from the beginning of it until now. That stuff doesn't matter. What matters is right now. Are you ready to tie that scarlet thread on that window? And say, I'm ready for you to come. I'm ready for you to be here. I'm ready to do it right now. I'm ready to take this opportunity, this second chance that you're willing to give me. Think about it. Probably the most known verse in all of the Bible is John 3:16. What does He say? For God so loved the world that He gave His one and only Son, that whoever should believe in Him should not perish, but have everlasting life. Now, He didn't say God gave His Son for a handful of people, for 144,000, as some might say, or for this group or that group, or if you're good enough, if you're pretty enough, if you're loving and kind enough. He didn't say that. He said, for those who are prostitutes, those who are in prison, those who have disobeyed any and everything, who've been separated from God. Who's that? Every one of us have been separated by our own choices. God gave Him for us. And you think about all of these relationships. You think about all these things in this life. All the people around us. And sometimes we forget. We had a second chance. And we accepted it. When you name Jesus Christ as the Lord of your life, that's the same thing that Rahab was doing, in essence, by tying that scarlet thread, was saying, I know that God rules, and I'm ready for Him to rule in my life. What are we doing with the people around us? Are we telling them and asking them, are you ready for God to return? He's going to come, and He is God of heaven above and earth below. He is God right here of our choices that we make every single day. Are you willing to give those? Are you willing to allow Him to be the Lord of your life? Are you willing to allow Him to rule in your life? If we listen to Him, as Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount, if you listen to my words and you follow after my words, then you'll be likened unto the wise man who built his house upon a rock. And so when the storms came and blew against it, that house was able to stand. Your life will be able to stand all the storms in this life if you listen to me.
if you'll follow after my word.
Now the passage a while ago that Gil read for us back in Acts chapter 26. Paul was Saul.
And I had him. I wanted that read because you look at Saul as reflecting on his life. And he's saying, you know, I was a pretty horrible person. If there was anyone who was far worse than Rahab ever dreamed of being, it was Saul. Saul said he killed lots and lots of Christians. He put them in prison. He destroyed families, tore them apart, did everything that he could, trying to even make them blaspheme against God, he said.
There wasn't anyone who ever lived that was worse human being than Saul was. That's what he says. That's who I was. That's the things that I did. And he says in verse 15 of that passage, in 14 he says, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? In 15 he says, who are you, Lord? And he said, I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting. I'm the one that you're going out and you're killing all these people and doing all these things against. And you've got to stop it. You have an opportunity to change. And that's what he tells him. Get up, stand up, and on your feet. For this purpose I have appeared to you, to appoint you a servant, a minister, and a witness, not only to the things which you have seen, but also to the things which I will appear to you, rescuing you from the Jewish people and from the Gentiles to whom I am sending you, to open their eyes so that they may turn from the darkness to light, and from the dominion of Satan unto God, that they may receive forgiveness of sins and an inheritance among those who have been sanctified by faith in me.
I want you to take to them an opportunity of a second chance to change their life. They're not going to know it. And Saul, I need you to understand you have a second chance also. You can change because what you're doing is persecuting me. You may think you're serving me. You may think that that's okay, but it's not. I'm telling you, you're persecuting my people and it's going to end.
You have an opportunity to change. You have an opportunity to do away with that life that you've lived so far. What are we going to do with those opportunities?
When you stop and you think about our own life, how many times do we not take the second chances that God has given us? The people He's put in our life, the changes that we see made, and the Word that He's given us, and saying, you know what, you don't have to live in fear. You don't have to live in that mindset of, man, I hope that I'm good enough. I hope that everything I'm doing is enough to get me there. I hope that God loves me. I hope that, and no, it's not it at all. God said, I want you to be empowered. I want you to understand that your life is right. Not because of who you are, but because of who I am. I am the God of heaven above and the earth below. Not you. Because every time you think you are, you end up being all these things like Rahab, or like Saul was, or like all the people in between. You're going to mess everything up.
Unless you listen to me. Now I want you to hear this morning. It doesn't matter what your life has looked like to this point.
You get that? It doesn't matter if it was running perfectly parallel to Saul or even Rahab. It doesn't matter what's happened to this point in your life. There's nothing you can do about it. You can't change it. So why worry about it? There's only one who can. And he says, quit worrying about yesterday and start thinking about today and what's going to happen in your future. What kind of future do you want?
Rahab said, I don't want the same past. I want a future. I know who rules in this world. The God of heaven above and the God of earth below. That's who I want to follow.
I want that in my life. And Saul said, that's exactly who I want. That's exactly who I want to be. So everyone from the beginning of time to the very end of time has the same opportunity.
Who is going to be Lord of our life? Will it be me? When I look in that mirror, will I look at myself and say, I'm the one who's in control of my life. I'm the one who has the intelligence to do what needs to be done.
I'm the one who's going to make all the decisions. Or is it going to be God, the God of heaven above and earth below? Who rules in your life this morning? Pretty simple question.
Not a real simple answer. It's going to have to change. It's going to have to be some things that change in our life, isn't it? It's not going to be easy putting a scarlet thread up saying, God's rule is in this house. It's in this life. Are you willing to do that in yours? Are you willing to allow a scarlet thread to be hung in your life? Because isn't that what we do when we say, I don't want to be in control and I want to come into contact with the blood of Christ? By being immersed into Him and saying, I don't want to live my life alone. I don't want to be that person anymore. I want You to rule in my life. That's what baptism is all about. Sometimes we forget about what it is. And it's actually just saying, God, I want You to control my life. I want You to be the Lord of my life. I don't want to have to come up with all the decisions every single day. I want to listen to You. I want to know how I'm supposed to live my life. And I want to live it according to Your will. Because I know everything that You ask of me is the best that I can possibly live. Because You love me greater than any kind of love I've ever known or ever will know. God loves us that much. For God so loved the world that He gave His one and only Son. Do you have a relationship with that Son? If you don't put it off. Don't wait, because it may not be tomorrow. It may not happen tomorrow. We have right now. That's all we need. What would your decision be? Are you ready to follow? Are you ready to hang that cord and accept your second chance in life? If you need to respond to Him this morning, we ask you to do it right now while we stand and sing.
Give us, we pour,